On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh Bass and Marcus Barrahall give you our summary of the most recent round of the NBA playoffs, talk to you about the upcoming lottery and the implications it might have on the free agency impact for the Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Nets podcast. We had a one-week hiatus. We went to Cabo like we were eliminated from the playoffs, but we're back. I am your host, Josh Bass. Joining me, my illustrious co-host, Marcus Barrahall. And we are Locked On Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one leading daily sports podcast that's out there. You're not going to find anyone that tops Locked On. Marcus, how was your little reprieve? How have you been doing?
It was good. Watched a lot of basketball, obviously. Even played some basketball with a friend of the show, Gavin Shaw. So definitely made the most of my time. Good to be back. Good to hear you, though, Josh. You know, I've seen you in person, but nothing quite like these recordings.
Nothing. There's really nothing that can that can replicate this experience. I hosted you and Gavin and our other friend, California Matt, me and the boys of, I'll redact my where I live currently for the next 6 weeks. But we hosted you at our glorious apartment to watch.
It is
Rockets.
Glorious, yeah. And Gavin got a bike from your roommate, so that was great.
Yeah, this is pretty crazy. So our one of my roommates, his dad had this bike in his apartment and didn't want to have it because it's a monstrosity and takes up a lot of space. So he foisted it on my roommate, and my roommate came home saying, "Oh, look, this is great. I have this bike that I'm keeping for us." I'm like, "You idiot. This is a huge bike, and it's going to take up a lot of space, and you're never going to use it." And he's like, "You're right. My dad screwed me over." And then Gavin comes over and saying, "Oh, like, I city bike all the time, blah, blah, blah." And he gets his bike for $10.
Yeah, you would think it's a good deal, but Gavin and I were walking back. I was going to the train after we left, and he was like trying to ride it a little bit, and it was like his knees were bumping, and it was not smooth, I'll say.
It's not made for someone who's 6'4".
That's fair. I think most things are.
Yeah, no, it's like he's like a basketball player. He needs a custom bike. He needs a custom bed, like the one Al Jefferson got a few years back, where he was on that humongous bed. But Marcus, have you been watching some basketball? We've seen some great series. I think capped off by Kawhi Leonard's insane buzzer beater last night.
Yeah, that was the last bit of basketball that we've seen. No games tonight when we're recording this on Monday. Conference finals starting tomorrow. So that second round was really good, I thought. Obviously, there were the two game sevens on Sunday, and then Warriors-Rockets was always entertaining, I guess, if nothing else. And then Celtics-Bucks was kind of that was probably the series I watched.
That was
the
least. My favorite.
Oh,
I love
what?
That. I love the Celtics getting thrashed.
Yeah, that's fair, actually. Yeah, and I loved Paul Pierce like saying that the series was over after Game One, which in some ways it was, just the other way.
Yeah, it was what people in the biz call a D-bag sweep.
That term's been thrown around a lot lately.
Classic D-bag sweep. No, but how does Paul Pierce go on like analyzing basketball? Like, what compelled him to say that? Because it was, even at the time, such a ridiculous claim, because it's not like the situations were reversed. Milwaukee was dominant all year, the one seed. Boston had swept Indiana, who was pretty weak at this point, and had a turmoil basically the whole season, really underperformed their win projections. And just because they come out really strong in Game 1, I don't understand how you feel good about saying that Milwaukee, who won 60 games, is done for the series.
Yeah, and like I could kind of see it if like they had also lost Game 2 and you said it after that, like they lost the first two at home. Mm-hmm. Then it's like a little bit more, because then it's like clear in sight, like if the Celtics just win these two home games, like it's over. But I thought one game was probably an overreaction. He did redeem himself a little bit, I guess, because he was, I think, the only guy to pick Portland on their panel in Blazers Nuggets for Game 7. So I guess that's something.
Yeah, I don't like Paul Pierce, especially after he just trash talked the Nets so much when he left for Washington. Left a bad taste in my mouth. I don't like the guy, and I hope to never see him on my TV ever again.
I remember Gavin and I actually went to, I believe it was Nets Kings at some point when Pierce was on the Nets, and he, like, I think he twisted his ankle or something. We thought we were, like, maybe at Paul Pierce's last career game because he, like, left with an injury. He continued to play after that.
But, he's the biggest injury faker. Vince Carter was actually the biggest, and Paul Pierce is probably second.
Yeah, Vince, like, used it strategically, too. Didn't he, like, pretend to be down at one point and then, like, get up and immediately, like, cut to the basket for a dunk?
Yeah, he's done that before.
It's a good move if you can pull it off.
Yeah, well, what do you think of the, I guess, the Toronto and Philly series, though? Because for us Nets fans, and I'm looping you in with that, I feel like this has the most intrigue. Obviously, Philly just beat the Nets, but they do have a few players that the Nets have been linked to, whether it be Jimmy Butler, who they've been strongly linked to. Tobias Harris has New York connections and will be a free agent. I feel like, obviously, J.J. Redick lives in Brooklyn. But really, for Philly to get bounced in the second round in that heartbreaking fashion, what implications is that going to have on the Nets' free agency hopes, and kind of what do you think of this series in general?
Yeah, it was obviously, like, an insane way to end the first Game 7 buzzer beater to, like, win a game in NBA playoff history, which is insane. You would have thought that that's happened at least a couple times, but it's crazy, especially because of the fact that I guess Philly, like, might fire Brett Brown. I know Embiid is, like, sticking up for him in the press, and I don't know, like, how much weight that will carry ultimately in, like, Elton Brand's decision. But it's just crazy to think that, I guess, like, a couple bounces could determine, like, whether or not this guy has a job in a couple weeks. So that's insane. And then also the fact that Jimmy Butler's, like, been pretty open talking about how he hasn't really thought about his free agency decision, but, like, he's going to look at culture. He's going to look at the coach. He's going to look at everything. So if Philly does decide to fire him, like, that could impact whether he wants to come back. And obviously Kenny Atkinson has done a good job, and I think he's well-respected, and the whole Nets culture is. So it seems like they're definitely more stable. It'll be interesting to see, though, like, what Philly does with that coaching staff and their bench also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. I feel like it really frustrates me, especially when we get to the playoffs, that you can't be so binary. I mean, would if Butler had, let's say, when he drove down the lane, when he hit that game-tying layup, if he had gotten an and-one on that, and then Kawhi misses his crazy shot, I mean, does that mean Brett Brown's deserving of keeping his job? I don't know. I feel like this happens a lot, especially with all these, and we're guilty of it ourselves with a very frequent podcast, but we overreact to each consecutive game. So there could be one game where D'Lo's amazing, say, we love D'Lo, we stan him. The next game he sucks, saying, oh, I don't know if he'll ever be an all-NBA player. It's just, it's constant reactions, and everyone's just flip-flopping after each game, that these rapid reactions don't really hold any weight to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder, like, how, like, even our takes would have been different if we had done more pods during the second round. Because I know, like, I like, flip-flopped on who I thought was going to win certain series throughout them. And obviously, like, there was a ton of takes after, like, Durant got injured in the Golden State-Houston series about how Houston was, like, either going to roll or going to be, like, at least force a Game 7. And obviously that didn't happen. So it kind of, like, the NBA has, like, a way of correcting itself. And, like, it is a game of runs, and it's kind of a league of runs where, like, certain things happen one day and then the next day they're completely different.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's the same thing that happened with Siakam. Like, I hear him getting lambasted across these podcasts today for a poor performance in Game 7, and he wasn't good. He looked tentative, but is that an indictment on if he can be the guy or not? No, because this is his first time really playing significant playoff minutes. He was great in Game 6 in a loss. He had came back from injury this series, or was it the series before that? But it's like, you can't make indictments on these players after one game. And I mean, maybe you can after a couple of years of gathering data, but it's just so hard to make these snap judgments, especially when it comes to hiring and firing people. Look at Brett Brown's breadth of work and decide from there if you want to fire him or not. I mean, do I think he's the greatest coach ever? Absolutely not. But I don't think that Kawhi Leonard hitting an insane, improbable buzzer beater, which is one of the best shots I've ever seen on TV, getting him hitting that means Brett Brown should be fired.
Yeah, I think it's like, I've seen a couple people say this on Twitter, but, like, if you're going to fire him, like, this shouldn't impact your decision. And if you're going to bring him back, this shouldn't impact your decision, basically.
Yep, yep. Ultimately, it will be up to Elton Brand and the gang there. We're going to take a quick break, and then coming up, we will talk about the upcoming NBA draft lottery and what implications it might have on the Nets and free agency. Welcome back to Locked On Nets, home of your Nets Daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Reminder, You can find us on the Great Himalaya Podcast app, wherever else you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car, say, hey, Alexa, Siri, whatever smart device you have, play podcast Locked On Nets, or I'm feeling generous, as always, any of our friends on the Locked On Podcast Network. Marcus, one of my favorite days of the NBA calendar is tomorrow. It's lottery day. Are you excited? Are you feeling lucky?
I'm so nervous as like a still, I guess, Knicks fan for now.
We haven't converted him yet.
Yeah, it's like a lot of pressure on one night, and I think that the fact that they flattened the odds, like, it was already a pretty slim chance for every team, obviously. But now, with the top three teams each having a 14% chance at the top pick, just looking at the numbers, the Knicks, like, every team, basically, the Knicks still have a 50% chance, basically, of getting the fifth pick. So,
yeah,
I'm sure you're happy about that, Josh.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy about that, and I love when Knicks fans really just don't get what they want. They're left so despondent. When the Knicks had the second best lottery odds, which was in 2015-ish, I want to say the Karl Anthony Towns draft, and they actually would have had the best odds except for who was on their team. Oh, Tim Hardaway went off against the Hawks and then won them the game, which cost them the best odds. So they had the second best odds. They got the fourth pick that year, and when they had gotten the fourth pick, I was with a bunch of my Knicks fan friends and filming them as they were so mad. And I'm actually very upset. I'm going to be on a flight back from North Carolina tomorrow. I'm getting back in at like 8 or 8:30, so I'm not going to be able to. I'll be watching on my phone on the Uber back to Manhattan, unfortunately. Can't watch live, but this is going to be a big night in the NBA right now, because it's really going to change a lot when it comes to free agency. If the Knicks get the number one pick, or the number two pick even, that's going to give them a huge building block, whether it be Zion, Ja Morant, or they decide to trade that pick for a guy like Anthony Davis. It's going to give them huge ammo in free agency, and I'd be shocked if they didn't sign anyone based on that. But if they get third through fifth, I think free agents, if it's not already predetermined, are going to take a look at this roster and say, why the hell would I go here?
Yeah, and it's like, it can give a certain level of certainty, I guess, like if they get the number one pick, because obviously there's all this talk about the free agents that may or may not come in about a month and a half on July 1st. But if you have the number one pick now, then you basically know that at least Zion is going to be here, or at worst, like you said, if you're trading him, you're trading him for someone who's like extremely top end. So that would be a big, kind of like a big exhale moment. But then again, if it's the other way, and if it is like the fourth or the fifth pick, and you're looking at maybe Cam Reddish or Jarrett Culver, someone like that, obviously,
or
those
my
guys,
boy Sekou Doumbouya.
Of course, I know you're trying to put that out there.
I'm really trying to put that in the atmosphere. I'm saying Sekou Doumbouya's name as much as I can to Knicks fans.
Right. So if it is a Sekou or one of those other guys, they obviously still have potential to be like a good player in this league. Otherwise, they wouldn't be a top whatever pick. But at the same time, I think most people kind of know that there's a clear number one, and I think even a clear number two with Ja. So though anything other than pick one or two, I think, is going to be upsetting for Knicks fans, which is tough because I'm pretty sure the odds of them getting a top two pick are maybe like 1 in 4. So
yeah, and it's funny, just thumb the Sekou thing for another moment. One of my roommates is a huge Knicks fan, and I sent him a scouting report a month back, which said that he compared Sekou Doumbouya to a poor man's OG Anunoby, and I think he just lost it.
Incredible. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, but I agree on the certainty thing. I mean, everyone loves draft picks, but you analyze a draft all year, and until the lottery actually happens, these top 14 teams don't know where they're going to be. And especially when you look at some of these teams kind of in that 7 to 14 range, they have a lot of uncertainty at play, whether that be Memphis with Mike Conley, a Dallas knowing how KP is going to come back, the Lakers, of course, Charlotte, you don't know what's going to happen with Kemba Walker. And for these teams, if they were to get lucky and just move up the lottery and pull off a big win, similar to what happened in 08 when the Bulls got Derrick Rose, that could be a franchise-defining moment. You know, Charlotte, Kemba Walker might be on his way out. If they were to hit the number one or two pick, that could be huge for them. Miami's in cap hell with a team full of mediocrity. They desperately need something. Think about a team like Sacramento. If they were to hit hit. Now they become a huge destination and one of the most attractive young teams in the league, adding onto a core of De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, Bagley, all those guys.
Yeah, and it's the flattening of the lottery odds has made it so that it's like a lot less predictable, I guess, than it would have been. And the fact that they're drawing the top four picks now as opposed to the top three. So there's like another possibility, I guess, because just looking at all the numbers, like Minnesota has a 14% chance of getting a top four pick, which is the same odds as the Knicks have of getting the number one pick. And Minnesota, they weren't great this year, but obviously with like Karl Towns, they have a ton of talent at that position. So if they got him with like a John Morant type, then like any team basically that jumps up into that top two is going to have the potential to make like a big leap next year and be really attractive for free agents. So definitely a big night in the NBA for these teams that haven't had big nights in a while.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And besides the Knicks, who would you most want to get the number one pick?
I think Atlanta's probably the most like fun team already, so just giving them like another guy would be cool. I like Memphis.
I like Memphis also.
It would be insane, but if the Lakers got him, I don't know what would happen. There's a 2% chance of them getting the number one pick and a 9% chance of a top four pick. So 1 in 11.
Mm.
Not terrible.
You never know. For me, New Orleans, I think they would be interesting. I definitely agree with you on Atlanta. I think Memphis would be interesting also. Imagine Zion and Jaren Jackson. But I'm thinking New Orleans just because then they'd be able to trade AD and get a nice haul back. So now you have that haul that you're getting, Zion, still have Drew Holiday, who's a really good player. And now all of a sudden you have a lot more weapons at your disposal. And I'm a big New Orleans guy in general, so I hate that the team's in such a rut right now with AD looking to leave and the arena just being so empty. So I want something that can invigorate them and give them a superstar that AD can never deliver on in New Orleans.
And New Orleans is actually crazy. I didn't even think about that, because if they say they got the number one pick and then the Knicks or someone gets the number two pick and wants to trade it, like they could get Zion and Ja Morant possibly, which is crazy.
Yeah. Do you think AD is worth the, do you think the number two pick is a good value for AD? I feel like number one, definitely Zion for AD makes sense, probably for both teams that are the trading parties. I feel like if I'm New Orleans, I don't know if Ja Morant or RJ Barrett gives me the certainty that I'd want, and just the multiple kind of shots in the arm that I could have for Anthony Davis, just because you want to have more opportunities to win the lottery, so to speak.
Yeah, I guess it's just like if you're sure he's leaving, which it seems like he is, it's hard to do better than the number two pick. Obviously, there's going to be stronger drafts where maybe a guy who you can get at four next year or the year after is maybe better than a guy you can get at two this year. So
Cole Anthony.
Right, yeah, Greg Anthony's son. So maybe it's just about like how much you've scouted like the next two drafts. So a lot of work for them, obviously, with David Griffin there now.
Yeah, and I feel like everyone always says, oh, 2 years from now, the draft's going to be amazing. And then 2 years happens, like, it's actually not that good. But 2 years from now,
2 years away really from good. 2 years away from a good
exactly.
draft.
Exactly. The draft is always Bruno Caboclo. Yeah. We will take our final break, and then coming up, we'll talk a little bit about free agency and what to expect when the clock hits July 1st. We talk playoffs, we talk draft, and now we are going to talk free agency. Marcus, Kyrie Irving, really, it's been quite the wild ride this season for him in Boston. But right now, it kind of looks like the writing's on the wall for him to leave the Celtics. And there were odds released by Caesars. Who knows how accurate that's going to be a couple days back, probably 5 days or so at this point, saying that the Nets at plus 250 were the most likely to sign him. It seemed to come pretty out of the blue, given that the Nets have D'Angelo Russell and also have a really nice kind of six-man type fill-in in Spencer Dinwiddie. But what did you think of that? Do you make anything of it, or inside information in Caesars? What's going on?
Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting, just because I feel like they wouldn't, like the house isn't gonna like throw something up there that they're gonna lose on. I know that it doesn't mean that the Nets are like where he's gonna go, but I think to put them as the favorite means that at least some people there think that there is a good chance, and it's not a lock, as our podcast favorite, I guess, Stephen A. Smith, said there's like a 95% chance, I think, that Kyrie and KD were both going to the Knicks. So the odds are probably not that high. But Stephen A. did say that, quote, people in his inner circle are trying to bring the Nets into the mix, but clearly New York will be the destination. So I'm not quite sure what that means. I don't know what people he's referring to, but I know that Kyrie did grow up in New Jersey, so there is like a Nets connection. But yeah, you mentioned D'Angelo Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie. They also have Caris LeVert, who is probably better on the ball. So there are a lot of ball handlers in Brooklyn, assuming, I guess, Russell gets brought back, which if they get Kyrie, he probably would not be. But yeah, I don't know. Do you think that it's worth bringing in Kyrie if it's just Kyrie, or do you think that they should look to put that money into like a wing guy and try to bring Russell back?
Yeah, I mean, I think who's a better player? Definitely Kyrie. Who right. would I want on this Nets team if it's just them? And I think that's a question that you asked and definitely has to be addressed. I'd probably rather have D'Lo just because he's cheaper, he's younger, and Kyrie has just been a cancer this last year. And, you know, if what are the Nets going to be with D'Angelo Russell? Probably a 40-win team. What are they going to be with Kyrie Irving? A 45-win team. So is that going to be enough of a difference for me? Absolutely not. So, you know, if it's saying, okay, if you sign Kyrie, then it's going to be a lot more likely that either KD or Kawhi or someone joins also. Then D'Lo, I'm sorry, you had a great season, but get the hell out of here. but if it's no guarantee for another superstar to come in, I think you take your chances with D'Lo and what you've built so far and try to use that extra cap space and flexibility to upgrade on the wing and see if you can cobble together a team that, you know, like a, who knows, like a Toronto or like one of these teams have been able to gradually, year after year, improve just a little bit and hopefully one day make a conference finals.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that both Philly and Boston, who had great seasons and are like have like a really good core going forward, kind of regardless of how the offseason goes, but they both have pieces that could be on the move and like key guys who could leave. And like if, say, Tobias Harris or Jimmy Butler came to Brooklyn, and then Kyrie maybe went to the Knicks or something. Like, I still think that Philly and Boston would be at least playoff teams. In Philly's case, I think they'd still probably be one of the top teams. And then the Knicks would obviously be up there, and the Nets would be up there because they'd be getting these extra pieces. And I think that the top four in the East was so good this year. And, like, it's crazy to think that next year that could be even, like, a top six as being really good. And maybe the balance of power is kind of shifting, where the East is almost going to be like the stronger conference next year.
Yeah, I think we saw it this year where, yeah, as you mentioned, the top half of the East was pretty good. You know, you still have some of these bottom feeder teams, but if the lottery strikes right, you know, Atlanta could be good, Chicago might not be terrible, the Knicks could really vault up, and you have a lot of these teams in the West that are kind of mired in mediocrity, whether it be New Orleans, Memphis, Minnesota, Phoenix is a complete mess. Really the only team in the East that you know is going to suck, like absolutely suck next year, sub 25 wins, will be Cleveland.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And I feel like, I don't know how you feel about this, but given the uncertainty surrounding Kyrie and also Al Horford potentially thinking about opting out, I think besides the Knicks, the team most likely to finish the worst in the Atlantic Division would probably be Boston, just because they have a high floor, but they also have a high ceiling, but they also have a really low floor, because if Horford leaves, if Kyrie leaves, Hayward, there's no guarantee he's going to improve on this year. Really what they're left with is kind of just a bunch of role players. Yeah, and you have to hope that Tatum and Brown take a leap, but I'm not seeing enough there for them to really be a surefire playoff team if Horford and Kyrie were to leave.
Yeah, and I guess we're not really talking about them because they're still playing, but Toronto could lose Kawhi also, and then if that happens, like maybe that spurs them to like trade Lowry and kind of build around Siakam and more of the young guys. So maybe they take a step back. I think that the Atlantic Division was like one of the best in basketball this past season. And I think next year and going forward, that should continue to be the case. I think all five teams, assuming the Knicks like kind of get somebody or get something in the summer, all five teams will be competitive. And I could see all of them honestly making the playoffs, which I don't know if that's ever happened, but that would be tough because it's five out of eight, obviously. So
yeah.
Just the math there is crazy.
Really, it's something else. I feel like it happened a couple times in the Western Conference and maybe the mid-2000s or so, just when you had those divisions with all the Texas teams, and then who else was in that? All the Texas teams, Memphis was decent, and there were a couple years where New Orleans decent, maybe four or five that happened, but I feel like it's happened before.
Yeah, but just to circle back, it seems like Milwaukee is like clearly going to be a front runner next year. But then, like, beyond them, I have no clue, like, who's going to be like the other top two team in the East. Like, I feel like it's wide open.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, because if Kawhi leaves, then I think it's super wide open. Obviously, if Kawhi's there, you have to assume Toronto's still going to be that number two spot. But even them, you know, Lowry gets significantly worse every year. Ibaka, who knows how old he really is, and he's definitely very inconsistent, even though he had a nice bounce back year this year. Big Spain has definitely taken a step back in the playoffs, and you don't know how he's going to hold up over another full regular season. Really, the only sure guys on Toronto are Kawhi, obviously, if he stays, and then Spicy P. You know, you're going to get really good number two, number three guy production from him. But, you know, they've lost a lot of their depth. They traded Jonas Brother. Delon Wright's gone. Van Fleet didn't have the year he did a couple of years back. OG Anunoby's been really hurt this year. So really kind of they were striking gold every time with these role players, and their luck has kind of run out over the last 12 months or so on that.
Yeah, their bench last year was their big strength. And then I guess it kind of started when they traded for Kawhi and got rid of Jakob Poeltl. Big shouts to him. But they moved on from him.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Poeltl.
Exactly. They moved on from him. They moved on from Delon Wright and some other guys. And they were kind of playing like six, seven guys in that game seven. It was like the starters plus Ibaka and Van Vliet. And it'll be interesting if they lose Kawhi, because they were so reliant on him to score in that game seven. It felt like he was the only guy who could create anything. Like, even when it was Ibaka hitting a three or Lowry kind of driving and putting up a shot, it was because Kawhi penetrated and kicked, or because he like drew attention in some other way. Like, everything was running through him.
Yeah, no, it's pretty crazy. Like, they had such a deep team, and now they played seven guys only. And you look at the guys that didn't play: Eric Moreland, Malcolm Miller, Norman Powell, Jeremy Lin, Patrick McCaw, and Jody Meeks. Like, what happened to this really formidable Raptors bench that they had when they were making their runs with DeRozan and Lowry?
Yeah, and I thought they'd get a little more from Jeremy Lin. I know he's not, like, even playing, but yeah, I wanted to see him a little more.
I hope they break him out in the Milwaukee series.
Crack him
he
out.
Still has I think he still has a few good games left in him. He just didn't. It's one of those things where a guy gets traded, doesn't get in a rhythm, and then the coach just doesn't trust him enough to give him minutes in the playoffs.
Yeah, you're not gonna like get him like acclimated during the playoffs, I guess. So maybe if he had come over in the off season.
Yeah, because he was decent in Atlanta this year.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good. Him and Trae Young, the combo.
Yeah, alas, that will do it for today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Please subscribe to us wherever you find your podcast. We hope that's the Himalaya podcast app, but there are a lot of good options out there. Rate us 5 stars, give us reviews, tell us what you're loving, what you're hating about myself, because I know you're not going to hate anything about my man Marcus.
If you are, let find me know, though.
Yeah, that would be weird, but still, let him know. Find him on Twitter at Marcus Barahal, Barahal. I am on Twitter at JMBass_. And you can find us both at Locked On Nets. We'll be back later this week to talk probably about the draft lottery and what we're seeing from the game ones of the respective conference finals series. We're looking forward to it. And thanks for sticking with us. And we'll be giving you some regular podcasts coming up.
Bye.